Hi and welcome to the next episode. Hi. You're not doing your rustling thing again this week, are you?
No, that's me. Sorry.
All good.
Where's my phone gone? that's Elizabeth. I don't know.
And
sucking out a straw, mate. Sorry about that. Right.
Hope it's just a straw.
Trust me.
You're popping and things like that, by the way.
Popping?
Aye, it's like all rustling almost.
I'm not into anything like that, mate. Sorry. Puts a cross in. Kevin Drinkle. Oh, fuck's sake! God's sake. Right, I'm putting this on silent now. Sorry about that. Right, I'll start again.
Oh, well, you can't fucking beat sports today. No.
Can you remember that?
Nah.
No.
Oh, fuck, I'm a right old bastard, eh?
And welcome to the next episode of the Eye Ready podcast. As ever, I'm your host, Derek, and I've got my co-host, Dave.
Hello, everyone, and how are you this fine afternoon, Derek?
Not bad. I'm not as tired now because I've had a wee bit of lying.
Aye. This is like nearly night time for me, and it's still like sort of halfway through the night for you. You know, is it the start of your bedtime for you usually, is it? No, is it not about this time that you go to bed and stuff like that on a normal day?
You're not far wrong, to be honest.
Aye, exactly.
Right, so we've got a couple of games to kick off with today, and we will go straight down the pitch. No, we won't. We'll go down the tunnel. And on. I've done that last week as well.
Every single week you say that.
We'll go down the tunnel and onto the pitch. Right, so the first game was on Saturday the 15th of March. It was at home to Dunfermline. We lined up Bell, Smith, Forey, Mosney, Foster, Aird, Peralta, Black, Crawford, Clark and Big Jig up front. So there was a few changes to the team anyway, but we gave Wallace a wee rest. We gave Law a wee rest as well. So on the subs bench we had Simonson, Gallagher, Daly, Krabari, Shields, Wallace and Hutton. Dunfermline gave us a guard of honour on when we came out the tunnel because obviously we were newly crowned champions. And also there was a blue card display to support Dave King and his efforts on the 18th and 72nd minute, which seemed to be fairly well received.
Yep, it certainly was. It certainly looked the part when you saw back on the screens and stuff like that. So, yep, well done. And well done to the guys that organised all of that as well.
Mm-hmm. We're not going to talk too much about the game. In fact, we're not going to talk too much about both the games because they were carbon copies of each other. Very drab, very dull, very boring. Nothing happened from both teams. We happened to score two goals with no reply in both of them. Really, our goal in the Dunfermline game came from an absolute wonder free kick from, unbelievably, Stevie Smith.
Yeah, no, I couldn't believe that. I mean, as I said to you, I take it he'd obviously bound and gagged Ian Black and tied, you know, and held him in a dark room somewhere because that's probably about the only chance you would get to have a free kick outside the box as if he was away doing something else. But no, absolutely sensational free kick with Stevie Smith and totally unexpected. Any of the players in the team, you know, to score a goal like that. So,
oh, hold on a minute, you've got Peralta there.
Oh yeah, I keep forgetting about that one wonder goal he scored in that friendly against Dundee. But no, a great goal, and hopefully it'll keep Ian Black away from the ball now. If Stevie Smith's on the park and they'll let him have a crack from now on, because Ian Black's free kicks have been woeful this season.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it was deep into stoppage time in the first half. There was a lot of injuries in the first half. For a change, Rangers were dishing it out to Dunfermline just as much as they were getting it back. So that was obviously we've had quite a few games with Dunfermline this year, and they've been a very dirty team, especially the first game at Ibrox. But we were certainly dishing it out, so there was a lot of stoppages. Dunfermline's keeper had to go off after the third minute. But really, in the first half, nothing really happened. It was a free kick and that was it. It was a midfield game where nobody really got a hold of the game at all. And to be honest, the second half never got much better.
Yeah, it was. Do you think that if the players, you know, they knew, you know, the league had been won, and it was just a matter of, you know, playing these games without getting anybody injured, so that they're up for, you know, the cup match that was coming up a few days after?
Well, quite possibly. I mean, I'm guessing that's part of the reason why it was got a few players rested, and you had the likes of Jig up front for a change. Obviously, Jig was coming off the back of scoring a hat trick against Airdrie there, so obviously stick him up front and see what he does. But you know, it was disappointing, I've got to say. I mean, despite I would actually say Dunfermline played better in the first half than we did. They had more of the chances, and they certainly looked a wee bit hungrier, to be honest. So,
yeah, I think you're saying this nearly every week now, Derek, that we're disappointed by the performances and all that. You know, the odd one or two, I mean, they played better against Airdrie, but the rest of the time recently it has been very drabby.
Yeah, I mean, into the second half we went, and again it was more of the same. You know, but we got a wee bit better, we got more of a hold of the game, but not by much. We certainly came back into it, but again we never really offered much. A bit of a strange couple of substitutions came up. Jig came off and Hutton came on. The captain's armband obviously left Jig and it went to Stevie Smith, so I don't understand that. I would have thought maybe Ian Black, but
I don't know. Do you think there was a raffle before the game and Stevie Smith's numbers came up? And
well, you look at the team, fair enough. I mean, you've not really got a wealth of experience there in terms of, you know, staunch guys who you would give the captaincy. I mean, I would say maybe Ian Black, but certainly the oldest guy in the park would have been probably Peralta.
At the same time, should it come down to how old you are, or should it come down to guys that have been with the club, you know, the longest? And to be fair, it should maybe I'm being daft here, I don't know, but if you're talking about guys that have been with the club for a long time, it should maybe have went for the guy that came on for him, Kyle Hutton, because he's been to be one of the most experienced guys there, you know, a guy that's been with the club since he was a boy. So I don't know if it would maybe be him, but you know, I was quite puzzled about that as well. But
well,
you know,
wait till you see the next one then. You know, Smith then came off, Gallagher came on, we'll get to him in a minute, and who else was given the armband? Crap Barry.
Ah, big Crap Barry, there you go. And apparently, I was reading all about him, is that he's not going to be offered a new contract in the summer. I don't want a round of applause by anybody there, but a bit of a strange one there. Is it, is he going to be the first Brazilian ever to captain Rangers? Is that the reason that we've done it, to go down in this, some sort of quiz book? Who was the first Brazilian player to captain Rangers? And then you've got him for maybe the last 20 minutes of a match or something like that. Yes,
it was to prove we weren't the anti-Brazilian or anything like that, probably, no doubt. But he came on at half-time anyway for Mojny, because Mojny was on a yellow. He had actually done quite a few rash challenges, so I think it was maybe more of a precaution, given his recent temperament, to take him off. That's why Krabari was on the park. But anyway, you know, we kept plugging on. You know, again, it was much of the muchness. Danny Granger for Dunfermline got sent off after his second yellow card. It was a challenge from behind in Gallagher as he was running in goal, so quite justified there. And Gallagher was making his debut, and he scored of all times.
Yep, some size of a boy, yeah. I was quite surprised when I saw him. He's certainly, if he was going to get a wee run, he's going to give defenders a lot of problems, I think.
Well, yeah. Black ran forward with the ball. Clark was the only other player that was really far enough forward there. On the edge of the box, he actually lost the ball from a challenge, but luckily the ball trundled into space into the box. Gallagher, who had made a run from the halfway line, first time shot past the keeper into the back of net. Fantastic, and he actually looked quite lively since he came on the 70. Said third minute as well, so it was amazing to see, and he's certainly going to be possibly a good player for us.
Yeah, it just shows you the difference, and you know, somebody with a wee bit of hunger coming into the team, somebody that's desperate to try and make an instant impact. We go on about Templeton all the time, but he's about the only one that seems to do that when he comes on as a sub, so it was refreshing to see, and I think we were all delighted for him being on his debut.
Yeah, so the game finished 2-0. That goal was right on the death there, right in injury time again. So 2-0 final score. Made us in the league 29 played, 27 won, 2 drawn, 0 lost, 89-4. 14 against, 75 goal difference, 83 points, which is 29 points ahead of Dunfermline, who are in second place.
89-4, so we need 11 goals to reach the, you know, the 100 goals. I'm sure you said that, did you say that we're plus 75 there? Did
75,
you say? Yeah. So still a long way to go for us to get the, you know, the 100 goals plus, which I think is quite a big feat to do, but surely we can go for the 100 goals scored in the league. You know, we've still got how many games left? About seven matches,
yeah.
I would like to think that they would smash that 100 goals record. I think, you know, the actual plus total is going to be quite difficult for us now. But, you know, a great record. It's still been pretty, the vast majority of it, but it has been effective. So, fair play. Another win, especially against the team that are second in the league. So,
yeah. So, we'll move on to the next match now, which was Monday, the 17th of March, just a few days after the Dunfermline game. It was obviously the Scottish Cup quarter-final replay against Albion Rovers, and it was played at Hamilton Accies ground. So we lined up Bell, Foster, Mojney, Jigg, Wallace, Gallagher, Black, Hutton, Law, Aird and Daly. Subs bench we had Simonson, Peralta, Crawford, Clark, Smith, Forey and Shields. Now obviously a lot was made before the game, the fact that we even had to go to replay in the first place. The Albion Rovers manager was quite bullish before and after the game about saying that he was going to beat us, which, you know, I would be full of confidence as well after the performance he put out the first time. Really, we dominated the game from start to finish without actually doing much. You know, it was a really kind of dull, boring game, much the same as the Dunfermline game. We had 30-odd shots on goal, but, you know, we never actually had a lot on target. We scored the first goal, Fraser Ayres scoring on the 18th minute. So long cross came into the right into the box, volley from Ayres into the back of net. It was our first attempt at goal, first goal, so brilliant.
Yeah, it was a great goal, a great volley. I don't know if you saw at the end of the game, Derek, when they were interviewing Aird and John Daly. John Daly was congratulating him on a fantastic header that he scored. So I don't know what game John Daly was watching, but that's what he said. And the least we say about Fraser Aird's accent, the better.
Well, certainly.
It's actually, Fraser Aird's accent sounds like your dodgy Australian accent that you put on, mate.
Could I might put another shrimp on the barbie?
Fuck's sake, is that a free Fraser Aird that you just got to? And before anybody slags us off, we know that Fraser Aird is not Australian.
Sounds Irish.
I'm not quite sure what he sounds. It's a sort of mixture of American, Canadian, Irish, Scottish, mixed in with your dodgy Australian. It's the strangest accent I've ever heard of. Anyway, let's get back to football.
Alright, so it was a largely disappointing half, despite being a goal up and dominating possession. Pretty much more of the same old, having the majority of the game but not creating much up front, and there was a distinct lack of creativity from midfield into attack, and it all looked pretty stale, to be honest. We had a few other chances, but nothing really tested anybody, to be honest. We never looked like conceding. Albion did have one chance in the 25th minute, though, when the ball was cut back to one of three Albion attackers who were unmarked in the box, a stinging shot, and it was hit from about 10 yards right at Bell, who saved it fairly comfortable. So into the second half, 57th minute, that was the first note I've got here. We went 2-0 up, John Daly. Cross came in from the right from Foster, who was largely having a decent game, and in his typical fashion, Daly headed it into the back of the net.
Yeah, it's your usual textbook stuff with Daly up front. It was a good cross in before Foster, I'll not take that away. Daly got up, you know, ahead of the defender and managed to guide it into the far post. You know, it was a textbook header, something that we try, you know, I don't know how many times each game, and, you know, fortunately this time it did pay off. Nothing spectacular, just what you would be expecting Big Daly to be doing for us.
Yeah. The only other note I've got here is that there was an absolute fantastic save from the Albion Rovers keeper on the 63rd minute, so just no long after we scored. Basically, the defender tried to clear it in the box, deflected off Law, who was running into goal. It was about 6 yards out, and it was going into back of the net, and the keeper from a close range pulled off, you know, it was an Andy Gorham save, to be honest. So it was quite unfortunate there, but it was quite a lucky chance as well, and it makes a change Law getting up that far forward as well.
Aye, we've not been used to seeing him doing anything like that recently. He's just hoping that that's, you know, he's going to be doing that and the games for now on. No, there's a lot of games left.
Well, no. So, again, that's really all I've got in the half, because, as I said, it's really, really a boring game, to be honest. It was another half of dominating the possession, but a complete lack of urgency and creativity. We never looked like losing a goal. There was no clear-cut chances like in the first half for Albion. But, you know, again, it was disappointing. There's a lack of, as you said, I don't know, is it the fact that the league's won and we've wrapped it up and there's a lack of trying? I don't know. It's something that certainly needs to be worked on. And it's we're in an, at the end of the day, football's entertainment and we're not getting entertained. And it's not good enough, to be honest, for me.
I don't know, Derek. I thought this game in particular, we would have really been going out hell for leather to try and score 4 or 5 goals in this game just to try and prove a point. But again, it was turned into a training exercise. It was turned into a nice wee passing the ball about here, the odd shot here and there. No great urgency. As you say, we never looked like we were going to concede. I think Albion had their one sort of main chance that Bell, you know, dealt with, and that was about it. But I would have really liked to have seen a bit more urgency and a few more goals in it, because, as I say, the first leg, the first game against them, we were a laughing stock, and I thought that might have spurred the players on to go in there and really give them a paste in, but it wasn't to be.
No, I mean, I don't know what's needing to happen. McCoy's just came out and said in the press this week that, you know, he's going to start playing a wee bit more youngsters, obviously, because the league's wrapped up, but he's not going to kind of just chuck the whole under 20 squad in. You know, there's a lot of players that have been kind of found wanting this year. I mean, I think Law, you know, as we've said, put Trialis back in his shirt again, because he's been pretty disappointing apart from a handful of games, you know, this season, and that was at the start. Jig, you know, how can you leave him out? You know, he's scoring, you know, 3 hat tricks this year from the centre back. However, his legs are gone by the look of it. You know, it's. What do you do?
I don't know. I mean, for this season, we obviously have to stick with the squad we've got. We've got potentially 2 of the biggest games that we've had in quite a few years coming up. If we were lucky enough, I'll not say lucky, if we were good enough to beat Dundee United and get into the final, which, you know, we're going to really struggle going on the last few games. You know, you would be thinking that all the players would be really well up for this. I think we touched on this in the last pod. I know that if I had potentially a huge game coming up, I would want to be the standout in the team to make sure that I'm definitely not going to be getting left out of that, you know, the semi-final team. But none of them really seem to be playing with that much urgency. And I don't know if it's complacency that, it doesn't matter how I play, I'm going to get my game, you know, in this match. And it really shouldn't be there. So maybe bringing in a few of the young players in for the last, you know, few games before we play this match. And we keep forgetting we've got a cup final coming up as well, you know, in the Ramsness Cup, which maybe is the premier cup competition in Scotland, but it's still massive. We've never won it before. We want to go and win it, and we'll be playing a team from a higher league than us again, which is going to test us. So maybe if we're bringing in a few young players who will be busting a gut, would maybe make some of your usual players sit up and take notice and maybe spur them on. That's what I certainly hope will happen, but I don't know, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, even Wallace has not been bad. He's been quite quiet in the last maybe 5 or 6 games, though. And I don't know, is that a symptom? There's a lot of people say, is that because we're really missing McLeod? And when you look at it, a really, really bad performance has started since he went out. So, I mean, I don't know.
We've been saying it for a while, Derek, about Law and McLeod. I think the vast majority of us, if we were wanting to see a player playing in that sort of attacking midfield role, we would want to see McLeod. He looks more natural playing in that position. He certainly causes more problems. He maybe doesn't hit as many shots in that as what Law does, but he certainly links up the attack a hell of a lot better than what Law does. And ever since he's went out, Law's been back in the team, and maybe sheer complacency from Law. There's nobody here to oust me for this team, so I'm going to be getting my game every week, so it doesn't matter how bad I play. And he has his. It's not that he's been bad, Law. He's just not really done much during the games. We can't say he's had a bad game. We can't say that he's made any mistakes. But he's just, when he gets the ball, it's all pretty simple stuff from him. And there's not been anything outstanding at all. And it's players like that that we look for, you know, to be really, you know, getting their foot right into the game and making the other team really work hard, because, you know, he's the one that's doing all the creative stuff, and he's really been so quiet that the opposition team have not really had to deal much with him.
Yeah. So, as Dave alluded to there, we have set up ourselves a semi-final tie with Dundee United. It's controversially at Ibrox, but certainly we'll get to that in the next few sections anyway. But certainly, as Dave said, it's going to be a tough game. We'll need to be on point. Certainly Dundee United have their good form this year has kind of waned in the last few games, but no doubt they'll be up for that, and it'll be another tough game for us. And hopefully, you know, if we're going to get beat, we're going to put out certainly a better display than we did last year in the cup with them.
We've certainly got to, Derek. We've got the experience in the team. We've got all these Premiership players, supposed Premiership players, playing for us. It's going to be at Ibrox. Dundee United have got a very young team, but a good team. And I just really hope and pray that all our experienced players will turn up at the same time when we're playing them and really give them a game. That's all us as Rangers fans are wanting. We want Rangers to be able to compete. We know that we're still a couple of seasons away from, you know, comfortably being back and winning games at that level. If we can go out and compete in that match and really give it our all, then that's what we're looking for. And if we manage to pick up a victory in it, then fantastic. But as you say, we can't crumble like we did against them last year. We were absolutely woeful against them last year. We did nothing, and we were like the rabbit getting caught in the headlights last year as well. We all looked terrified. Cannot afford to be like that this time. We're going to have the vast majority of the crowd, like, well, as you say, we'll discuss in our next section. It's at Ibrox. Surely they can raise themselves for this game. It's going to be massive. It's live on the TV. I'm going to be in Tenerife when it's on, so I'm going to be down at the Bluebell Bar in Tenerife watching it with all the other Bears. And surely they're going to put in a better performance.
Well, we can only hope. So, they've covered the games there. In terms of our next game, we play Brechin City away on Sunday the 23rd. It's a 12:45 kick-off. It's on BT Sport, so we'll see how that turns out. Anyway, we'll go down the next... We'll start the next... Anyway,
see, you get lost again.
I know. It's all the transitions are hopeless. Anyway, we'll finish up there and we will go to the Blue Room.
Quite simply, we're the only club in the world who could do that. We are the people.
Right, so obviously the biggest thing that, or the only real major thing that came out in the Blue Room this week was the fact that Dave King was over, and he had obviously met fans groups in London, he had met fans up here, he met the Union of Fans, and then he obviously had his boardroom Oh yes, he had the boardroom talks, and which he was apparently summoned to by Summers, like the naughty little schoolboy that he is. Mm-hmm. Obviously we were expecting, you know, things to happen from it, and obviously Dave King came out afterwards with a statement, but preceding that was the Rangers board saying it was a helpful meeting. We agreed on a lot of things, and we agreed on the way forward. You know, we've said that we're not going to use the Ibrox and Auchinhowie as security. Dave King's then obviously came out with his statement as well, saying that, you know, again, helpful talks. It was good, honest discussion. We both share a common vision. Everything really was discussed like he wanted to. The only thing was that it wasn't in full detail was obviously the Laxey loan of 1.5, or the joint Laxey and Easdale loan of 1.5 million. It's a bit of a strange one, because he's basically came out and says, right, we'll give them 30 days, which was still the total amount of time left in the 120-day consultation. He said there's 30 days to go, we'll give them that and we'll take it from there. Basically saying that, you know, well, the board have came out and said that, you know, we're not going to use Auchinhowie, we're not going to use Ibrox as security. They're a PLC company, they've came out in the open public and stated that it's a binding thing, and, you know, we'll see what happens, and they've got to stick to that as well as their 30 day, you know, left of their consultation thing. Am I missing something here, or is it a case of, right, fair enough, they've came out and they've said that, you know, right, we're not going to use this, that and the other, we're going to give it 130 days, we've got a common vision. But they could turn round after that and say, fuck it, we're not doing that and we'll just do our own thing. You know, it's been a statement. It's been a statement from a PLC board. However, am I missing something here? But I don't think, is that legally binding or not?
I've got absolutely no idea, Derek. I think it's very strange that, I'm not saying that Dave King's done, you know, had a massive U-turn, but he arrived here apparently on the warpath with the Rangers board, and then after a meeting, things appear to be rosy in both sides, and we're still kind of left in the dark over everything. So it's interesting to actually hear what got said to Dave King. It make him say, all right, well, I'm going to give them their opportunity here for the 30 days. And as you say, still no transparency over this loan that they've agreed at the astronomical interest rates that they were going to be securing against the car park. And what was the other thing that it was secured against?
Edmundston House.
There's still nothing being said about that. Whether that loan has, you know, was accepted and we've actually taken it, there's been absolutely hee-haw. So it's not really answered a lot of questions at all, apart from they've maybe kept Dave King quiet for a wee while, you know, at least for the next 30 days, but still no a lot has been taken from it. I didn't read a lot about what actually happened with Dave King and the supporters groups, if the supporters groups were happy with his sort of vision for the future or not. Have you got anything on that?
It was just more of the same as we've all heard, and that's what really the statement came out. I mean, going back to the board issue for a minute, I mean, fair enough, Dave King has... He's done the right thing in some respects, because he said that, right, it's a legally binding statement that they've made, or it's a binding statement that they've made, we'll give them their full 120 days and then we'll take it from there. So he's kind of building a rod for their back in a way, for the fact that, well, he's given them these 120 days because they've came out and said that initially, and, you know, it's a binding statement, so he's kind of making sure that he's doing the right thing by himself as well, right? Well, you know, they're saying it's a legally binding statement, or it's a binding statement over the security. So he's kind of been a wee bit cute with that one, which, well, again, though, it's how do we take it? Because there's still no really concrete evidence, and it's still getting away from the facts, right? The board have came out and says they're not going to use Ibrox and Auchinhowie as security. Well, why not put that in writing then? You know, it's all well and good coming out in the press and saying, right, this is, we're not going to do this. However, this is the problem. We want this in writing. Because at the end of the day, they could turn around and say, ah, we did say that, but circumstances have changed because we're going to go into liquidation or administration again if we don't do this, and then they go and do it. So at least if then there's something in writing that is basically gives the fans the power over Ibrox and Auchinhowie, and it's secured that way, we don't need to worry about that kind of thing.
Is this perhaps something that Dave King's going to be implementing after the, you know, they've given them 30 days? Is he going to be looking for assurances in writing for the supporters? It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the 30 days in that time, if Dave King has asked for written assurances about that. But again, as you say, it is still worrying. We're still not really any further forward. We'll really just have to wait and see what happens, because it's not that long now, really, until this is over, this consultation period that we've got.
Well, what I want to really know is what happens after the 30 days, in terms of, is it, you know, 121 days we find out, we get a statement and we take it forward? Or is it going to be 120 days, then we have another kind of few weeks of milling about? You know, this is things that need to kind of get sorted now at the end of the day.
I don't know what's happening as well, Derek. Is our sponsorship deal with Puma and Blackthorn, was that a one-year sponsorship deal, or was that just...
The Blackthorn one was, I'm not too sure about Puma. I think the Puma was a wee bit longer than that.
So, I mean, these are other avenues that surely they'll have to come down and say, oh, we've secured a new shirt sponsor, it's worth this, it's worth that. I mean, these are all other things that you'd like to think is going to be involved in all of this, that they're going to be able to say, look, this is how we're going to be investing. It's certainly going to be interesting, but again, we'll be the last ones to hear about exactly, you know, everything that's going on. But I'm sure there are some rabid haters of the club that will be firing out everything that's going to be happening to us before we all hear about it.
Fuck's sake. Was that just a text?
Oh dear, I know it's my wife when that tune comes up, you see.
She can't leave you alone, did she?
Oh, Ken, she's obviously bored. That's quite sad. She's actually texted me and asking me to put, can you put a pound on a coupon for me, both teams to score, Hearts, Bristol Rovers, Oxford, Chelsea and Derby, games are tonight and two early kickoffs tomorrow. That's quite sad. And my wife is looking at the football fixtures and asking me to put a coupon for her.
Oh, no.
Anyway, right, sorry mate, sorry for that interruption there. I hope you enjoyed the good, the bad and the ugly.
Yes, great. Anyway, that's probably about the main, that is really the only thing that happened in the boardroom this week. So again, we'll see what happens with it and we'll take it from there. But we'll move on now and we will go to the classic match.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Right, it's a slightly different classic match this week for the fact that I was only 3.5 when this game was on, so I have no recollection of it other than what I watched in the extended highlights last night. Certainly it looked like a cracking game, and I wish I was of mind to watch the game when I was that age. But certainly, Dave, what game is it?
Yeah, it's a game, it's possibly the first Old Firm game that I really, really took note of. It was away back in 1988, the 27th of September 1988, and it was the first season of our momentous 9-in-a-row campaign. We were about to play the current champions, Celtic, who had all their big-name players in, that had won the league the season before, who were well up for it. Of course, I am talking about the classic 5-1 match at Ibrox. A glorious sunny day at Ibrox. The sun was splitting the trees. Everybody was out. It was the classic McEwen's Lager Rangers top with the checks on it and the wee pop stud at the neck made by Umbro. That was the strip that we were wearing. Graham Souness was in charge. He'd went out, he'd signed all these quality England and international players in the team. I'll go over the team in a second. It really was a time of change for Rangers this season. This was the start of it all. This was when we became known, you know, as the Invincibles. This is when we were known as being the big spenders, and not just in Scotland, but in the whole of Europe. And at that time, in that era, the calibre of players that Graham Souness managed to bring into Rangers was absolutely phenomenal. We'll start with the Rangers team that day. We had England international goalkeeper Chris Woods. We had England's international right back in Gary Stevens. John Brown was in there at left back. We had Richard Gough and Terry Butcher playing at centre half. Terry Butcher, England captain, of course. Then, of course, we had absolute legend and England international Ray Wilkins, along with Kevin Drinkle, Ian Ferguson, Super Ali, Ian Durant and Mark Walters. And the Celtic team of that day was the man, we will talk about the jokes at the end of this game, it was Andrews and goals, then Chris Morris, Anton Rogan, Roy Aitken, Mick McCarthy, Peter Grant, Stark, Paul McStay, Frank McAvenny, Andy Walker and Tommy Burns. So it was a Celtic team full of international players, a Celtic team full of experience. Frank McAvenny had a fantastic spell down in England. He had been banging in the goals down there. He came back to Celtic. He was, you know, prolific for them the season before. But this Rangers team really was phenomenal. And a quote from the game beforehand, this shows you how supremely confident that Celtic were the day before this match, is Billy McNeil was being asked questions by the media the day before, and there was a lot of rumours about Frank McAvenny moving back down to play for West Ham. And this was an actual quote from Billy McNeil. I don't know if you've ever seen this or not, Derek, but he said, quote, "There's more chance of Maca moving there as there is of Rangers beating us 5-1 tomorrow." He actually said that. So this was, you know, everybody was well up for it. I think all the supporters knew that we were, you know, we were due a big performance by our players, and it certainly wasn't, you know, to disappoint. We started off really with all the ball. Celtic had absolutely nothing, but early in the match, Celtic had a cross shot. Terry Butcher cleared the ball. It came back. It hit off the post. It was a sort of cross, Hit Butcher hit the post back out to Frank McAvenny, who hit it on the rebound and scored and put Celtic 1-0 up. And we thought, oh no, here we go. You know, we've got all these players that are playing in possibly their first Old Firm game, or a lot of them had. How are they going to react? But we didn't have to wait too long, because on the 10th minute, we had a free kick from Ray Wilkins on the right-hand side.
Ray Wilkins will take the free kick. Goff is in the box once again. So is Butcher. Back to Brown. Blocked by McCarthy. There's McCoist!
He put it, the ball in. The ball was headed by Terry Butcher out to the edge of the box to John Brown. He hit the ball in the half volley. A cracking shot. It rebounded to the edge of the box, and who else was there? Super Alley, just at the edge of the box, fired the ball in to make it 1-1 to Rangers, and we just knew after that. You could tell there wasn't a lot of celebration for the Rangers supporters then. They knew that they had to go out and win this game. It was more determination than anything else. That made it 1-1. We plugged away and plugged away again. We were getting the vast majority of the ball, and then on the 35th minute...
Goff and Butcher have gone up. Launched in field by Stevens. There's Butcher. Back with Wilkins. Absolutely magnificent from Ray Wilkins. Well, a goal made in England. The throw from Gary Stevens. A header on from Terry Butcher. The stunning volley from Wilkins. And Andrews scarcely moved.
Gary Stevens had the ball for a throw-in on the right-hand side in front of Govan's stand. He threw the ball right into the box. Terry Butcher heads the ball up and out, and it just falls on the edge of the box for Ray Wilkins to score one of the greatest goals ever scored in an Old Firm game. On the volley for the edge of the box, absolutely phenomenal. Just a bit burst the net with a goal. He goes wild. Rangers go wild. It's still a goal that we all talk about to this day. Absolutely sensational, 2-1, and at that point Celtic knew they were going to get beat. I don't care what anyone says, even although it was 2-1 at half time, they knew they were going to get beat. We were by far the better team. We were pounding them at that point, and we only had to wait 1 minute into the second half. 46 minute.
Here's Durant retrieving it for Rangers. McCoist nods it on, an awkward one for Andrews, and the ball is in the net. It's a goal for Rangers.
Gary Stevens with a free kick. The ball fell to Ian Durant on the left-hand side to put in a fantastic cross. Ali McCoist sort of flicked his head up. The ball spun off the top of his head, high, right over Andrews into the net. A total blunder by the goalkeeper into the back of the net to make that 3-1 to Rangers. And we were cruising. Again, plugging away. And then on the 58th minute...
McCoist to Walters. Is now facing McCarthy, getting in a fine cross. Kevin Finkel! Walters to Finkel! It's 4-1 to Rangers!
Mark Walters with his trademark shuffle down to the byline, a tremendous cross. There's Kevin Drinkle. Didn't he have to jump, didn't he? He just had to throw himself forward, bang, on the end there. Past Andrews and goals, that made it 4-1. Absolutely in dreamland at that point. I can remember watching it on the TV. I was only young, jumping about the place, going absolutely mental. And then 62nd minute, still about 20 minutes to go.
White judging the fight well. And Brown. Aiken in trouble, there's Ali McCoist. There he goes this time, but Walters! Mark Walters makes it 5!
There's a mix-up in the Celtic defence. The Celtic defender lost the ball. I can't remember who it was. I think it was maybe Anton Rogan. Lost the ball. Ali McCoist nips through. He gets brought down. Clear-cut penalty. But to be fair to the referee, he let play go on because Mark Walters was there with a follow-up. Slotted the ball in 5-1 to Rangers with still 20 minutes to go. absolutely pounded them. It still goes down along with the game in 2000 as being the our highest ever score against Celtic at Ibrox. It was phenomenal. It was really, that was the start of it all, the nine in a row season. All the big names all really got together for that one. Tremendous performance. And then at the end of the match, Ali McCoist actually said when he was looking back that when we scored the fifth goal, he looked up at the time and there was still 20 minutes to go. And Ali says to himself, we're going to go in and get about seven here. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be. But, you know, an absolutely incredible performance. I said, in the roasting sunshine, for it being, you know, in September, it was great. It's one that all us older Rangers fans will always look at. And as I say, it's one of the earliest games that I can remember really quite clearly. And, you know, we'd all recorded it on our VHS videotapes and we'd been looking back on it constantly all the time. I'm sure people have it on DVDs and stuff like that when we look back at the greatest Old Firm games. It was just tremendous. I know you said that you only watched it, you've only seen the highlights on YouTube and that, Derek, but what a goal by Ray Wilkins. Absolutely phenomenal.
Well, I'll go down as one of the best Old Firm games, but Old Firm goals of all time as well. Absolutely phenomenal. And watching the highlights, I mean, just the atmosphere at Ibrox, obviously, you still had the old enclosure then. It was phenomenal atmosphere, and you know, you compare it to what we're getting now, it's obviously like night and day, but what a game. And we really want to get back to that kind of beating Celtic 5-1 and, you know, multiple score lines. So it was great to see, great performance as well. The extended highlights kind of showed you how good we were.
If you think about it, Derek, in the scale of things, we had signed England's goalkeeper, England's right back, England's captain, and possibly one of the most famous players in Ray Wilkins that England had in a long team. A guy who had, you know, played all over the world. He played for AC Milan, for God's sake. You know, he was an absolute legend. You know, in that scale, you know, today would be unthinkable for a club to pull all of those signings off. You know, a club that's not playing, you know, it's not an English club. Absolutely incredible vision by Graham Souness to bring all these players in. I know it cost a lot of money, but just to have those players playing for us in that period is just absolutely sensational. And it isn't until we look at our team just now and everything that's happened and look back, you know, even to a way back then, to see the calibre of player that we had in our team was absolutely phenomenal. And of course, my favourite during that period, you know how I like the wingers, Derek, but Mark Walters, simply sensational for us as well. Not quite as good as Brian Loudrup and all of that was, but certainly right up there with, you know, some of the best wingers that we've had at the club. The guy was just tremendous, and he did tear Celtic to bits that day as well, Mark Walters. Absolutely brilliant.
And one thing as well is a wee interview with Souness, obviously player manager at the end, and he said it was actually being down to England as well, so it was like a national game. I mean, that's unthinkable now that's an Old Firm game wasn't, but obviously back in the day that was, you know, obviously you had about what, 3-4 channels, didn't you? So
the one thing that I can't remember though, Derek, is I know that Souness came on in that game, he obviously had to get in, and you know how he was a fan of the hard tackle. Would I like to have seen some of the tackles in there, considering Celtic had players like Peter Grant, Mick McCarthy, Roy Aitken playing in there, you know, all really hard guys. Would I love to have seen some of the crunching tackles that would have went in when Graham Souness came on? It would have been like fireworks in there. It really would have been.
I mean, certainly, Mick McCarthy put in an absolute stonker on Ian Durant. He got a yellow for it, and he was lucky he didn't get a red. It was just clearly no went for the ball at all, and he just went for Durant, basically, and right in front of the ref as well. So,
yeah, there would have been some absolute cracking tackles in there, as I say, especially when Souness, and then the next season, of course, we signed Terry Hurlock after that, so that would have been something as well. But no, going back to the game, phenomenal, a phenomenal team that we had, and of course, we still had the likes of Ian Durant, Ali McCoist, Ian Ferguson playing, even back to guys like John Brown, who, you know, when you look at the amount of games that John Brown's played for us, I mean, that was away back in 1988, you know, John Brown's played in some of the biggest games that, you know, that our teams have ever played in, and that'll certainly go down as, you know, one of the best Old Firm games for us. So I hope everybody enjoyed it. Go back, Derek found a link to watch extended highlights of the match, and it is well worth watching. It was fantastic.
Absolutely. So as I said, it was certainly a wee bit of change since I'd never actually seen the game before, but it's great going looking back at these old classic games like that, and this is the reason why we do it, just to kind of get everybody's history up a wee bit. I mean, certainly that's something that I'd heard about, I'd never seen it, and this would obviously give me the impetus to go and see it. So eventually, once I get the internet sorted up properly, I'll get that posted up on the internet as well for you.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll move on now, and we'll go to our What a Player.
Brian, I mean, everybody wants to know, how come you are so good?
Tell me, Brian, why are you so good?
Right, so we have today
I hope you've got the same player as me.
Right.
So let's talk about this. We might have two What a Players for this.
We might. Today, well, like, funnily you should say that, because you said good, as if there was two of them.
You said there was two of them, that's fine, yeah. Yes. I've got the right player.
Well, maybe no, you might have the other twin.
No, I doubt
so that. There's a big clue, everybody. Yes, we have Ronald de Boer. Absolutely, yeah. Amazing player.
Yeah, fantastic player. And, you know, when you look back, I went onto a lot of his stats. I went onto YouTube to look at some of the games. The guy was absolutely sensational for us. If you look back, if you look at the amount of goals per game ratio that he played, and he wasn't even played as a striker for us, he was absolutely tremendous. I mean, I knew he was a class act player. You know, when he signed for us, he could play just about any position up front, right, left, support, forward. He was just brilliant. He was just great at, you know, finding space either for, you know, whoever was playing up front, or nipping into spaces, you know, just as the ball, you know, was about to get played in. He was just great. He was one step ahead of everyone else. And I keep saying to myself, I wonder what it would have been if he'd have been around in our team when we had Brian Loudrup playing for us as well, if he'd have been playing up front as well. The man was just a class act. And he's overlooked a lot, I think, because of players like Brian Loudrup and Paul Gascoigne. Certainly, in my opinion, he's been, you know, one of the top five players that I've ever seen playing for Rangers. I don't know about you, Derek.
Aye, I mean, he's certainly world-class player, and down that wing, he was just phenomenal, wasn't he?
Yeah, and like I said, he got played all over the place. He could either get played on the right, he could get played on the left, he could get played as the support man, and it didn't matter what position he got played in, he was just absolutely phenomenal for us.
Yeah, so Ronald de Boer, born 15th of May 1970, started his career with Ajax in 1987. He went on to FC 20, back to Ajax, Barcelona, then to us. Then he finished his career in Qatar at Al Rayyan and Al Shamal. And pretty much apart from Galatasaray, who his brother played for, Frank, he basically followed Frank about, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. If you look, I've got some stats here. When he went back to Ajax in 93, was obviously when they won the Champions League, Ajax. And he scored, you know, he had over 200 appearances, and I think it was roughly about 50 goals that he scored in total for them, which, you know, for a player known as a striker, is phenomenal. Barcelona, he didn't play as many games, no, compared to his brother, but 55 appearances, and I don't think he scored a lot of goals for them, about three goals, but he won La Liga in 1998-99 season. And then, of course, he came on to us in the year 2000. Now, Derek, I've got here, and I've looked at a few websites to try and get a rough estimate on appearances and goals, because, as you know, Wikipedia changes all the time. I've got 129 appearances and 40 goals for Rangers in total. Is that what you've got?
That's what I've got here. So
fantastic.
That's like a goal every, as you say, a great scoring record. That's a goal every three games for
phenomenal.
A midfielder.
Absolutely phenomenal. And of course, we won the league 2002-2003 season. He won the League Cup twice, the Scottish Cup twice with us, you know, and that was just in the space of four seasons. So, you know, incredible record that he had for us. And like I said, I think he gets overlooked a lot. But if you look back at some of the goals that he scored, you know, the amount of headers that he scored was unreal. And he wasn't really, you know, a big guy, just kind of average height. But the height that he could get up jumping and the power that he could get in his headers was absolutely phenomenal. And he scored tons of goals for us for headers.
Yeah. Would you say he's a standout goal? Because I've got one in mind.
I'm trying to think. He scored that absolute peach against Celtic when we drew 3-3 at Parkhead. I can remember that game. I've got one outstanding game that I'll get to in a minute, which I went on and on about at the time, and it's a bit ironic, the match as well. But I'm trying to think actual goals, because the compilation I've seen, he certainly scored his fair amount against Celtic as well. I've got here header against Celtic at Parkhead. That was in the 3-3 game. For that match, I was actually in Magaluf,
And I went to my mate's dad owns a Rangers pub in Magaluf. I'll not tell you the name of it, but we were in there and it was absolutely bouncing. It was a game, even though that we didn't win, it was, you know, just a brilliant game, a brilliant performance for us. But the board was outstanding in that game. Him and Arteta, I think, were our outstanding players in that match.
I mean, a great goal scoring record, and just his play in general as well, you know, never mind that, he was you know, really skillful, obviously, and you know, he could take on players and he would drive them forward. He scored a great goal against Partick Thistle, an overhead kick in the box, it was cross in for the left, and fantastic goal.
Yeah, it was. His all round play was absolutely brilliant. His passing ability was unreal. He really was on another wavelength. For him, for Ronald De Boer to be, you know, totally effective, you really needed to have a forward with lightning pace and at least one winger alongside him with lightning pace as well. I think that's how, when we signed Michael Moyes, they had such a good relationship, because Moyes was so quick in the turn, and they had guys like Kanchelskis and Neil McCann who were known for their pace as well. But he certainly he needed that, because the through balls that he used to pass through were phenomenal. And a game, Derek, I don't know if you can remember it, and it'll be a game that loads of people will forget. We played in the UEFA Cup 2002 against a team called Viktoria Žižkov. I don't know if you can remember that. We got beat 2-0 away from home in the first leg. So we were back at Ibrox trailing 2-0. And in my opinion, Ronald De Boer had his finest game for Rangers that night. He was absolutely sensational. Alec McLeish was in charge. He scored De Boer in the 43rd minute, in the 59th minute, to make it 2-2 in aggregate. It was just so incredible. None of their players could get near him at all. He's running off the ball. He's running with the ball. He absolutely terrorised them. The amount of chances that he himself created. He scored the two. We went on the 90th minute. We scored, and it was 2-2 on aggregate. It went into extra time. It was De Boer himself, I'm sure, that set up Neil McCann with a winner on the 97th minute. And then, probably our downfall, Alec McLeish took him off. He took him off. He subbed him. And I remember saying to Wiggy, the guy that sits next to it, I says, that is the worst move I've ever seen. This guy's here in the game. He's life for us tonight. That team are going to get a boost by him going off. And sure as fuck, they took him off. And Žižkov scored. They upped their game as soon as he went off. And we fucking crashed out of that cup. We got beat on away goals in extra time. And I solely blame Alec McLeish for that, because De Boer wasn't carrying an injury, he was still terrorising him. I don't know why the fuck he took him off, but you could just see that one player going off for us gave the other team a total lift, and then they scored in the breakaway and they scored against us. Totally heartbreaking for me that night. I couldn't believe it, because we were absolutely phenomenal against them and we threw it away at the end. But that match, even although we got knocked out, I would say was Ronald De Boer's best game for Rangers. I don't know if you can mind anything about that night or no, Derek, but I was there and it was just absolutely sensational for us, and we still bloody didn't get through.
Yeah, well, it was typical in Europe for us, wasn't it?
I know. I don't know what McLeish was thinking about that night. I was absolutely raging with him as well, a manager, you know. Well, so
quite obviously, because it wasn't sure as fate, it was sure as fuck.
Aye, definitely.
Yes, so Ronald De Boer, what a player. Obviously we got his brother short time after he joined as well to complete the partnership there. So it was unbelievable back then, we could get two world class players like the De Boer twins at Ibrox. And I was just looking there, I can't believe it was 10 years ago since they left. I mean, it just seems like, you know, a couple of seasons ago.
I know, that is quite scary, eh? So I mean, it was Ronald was always seen as the, you know, the kind of underachieving brother compared to Frank, because Frank was really successful at Barcelona. But I think he proved that when he came to us, how much a class act, a player that he was. He was absolutely brilliant.
Yes. So we'll move on now, and we will go to the news.
Good evening. I'm Will McAvoy. Will McAvoy. I'm Will McAvoy. Good evening. I'm Will McAvoy. This is Newsnight from New York City. I'm Will McAvoy.
Right, so the first thing I've got in the news here is Imran Ahmad's court case to try and get £500,000 out of us for no reason has been delayed. Was meant to be getting heard on the 1st of April of all days, complete joke, but it's been delayed until next year. They think it might be, you know, maybe October time, but they're thinking next year at some point. I don't know the reasons for it. I don't know if it's even a good or bad thing. It's just he's a complete waste of space. Don't want to talk much about him, but certainly the longer he can go without getting money, the better. So.
Yep, just another leech in your club, Derek.
Yep, absolutely. Bit of bad news in terms of injury-wise. Templeton, the guy we champion all the time, is out for 6 weeks at least, and Little is out for 4 weeks. Both were injured in the title-winning game, the 3-0 game at home to Airdrieonians. So it's a bit disappointing considering Templeton was certainly coming onto a game in the last few weeks.
Derek, I honestly didn't know that about Templeton. I'm absolutely gutted about that because he was the one shining light that we had, really the one player that I thought that we would really count on when we're going to be playing against Dundee United in this Cup semi-final. And I'm absolutely gutted about hearing that. I honestly didn't know that he was going to be out for that long, so that's a total blow for the club.
And the thing is,
really gives us problems now big time when we go in, because who do you put in his place?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with Little as well, never mind Templeton, Little's contract runs out at the end of this year, I believe, and he's been rather injury prone, so whether he gets a new deal, I'm not too sure. He'll be certainly on a decent wage. He'll be one of the better earners since he's been here quite a bit, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with him, because this might end his Rangers career, this injury.
Yeah, I know, and I mean, that is, I'm thinking back to Templeton, I'm raking in my head here as to what formation McCoy's going to put and who's going to play on the right, who's going to play on the left, and that is going to give us serious, serious problems now for this match, and I fear the worst now. You've put my fucking day on a complete dampener now, Derek.
I'm sorry, Dave, I'm sorry.
Nightmare, man.
Yes. So, we'll move to the elephant in the room now, which is Dundee United. Where do we start with this? It really all started, obviously, that Ibrox was decided as the two semi-finals in Parkhead.
A long time ago, back
in October last year, yep. When Rangers and Celtic were still both in the competition, so always the possibility that both teams could be meeting each other in the final. So, you know, obviously no really complaints about what were made about it then. I mean, obviously we had a few issues about it. Well, why was Parkhead chosen as a final rather than Ibrox? But that's a by the by. That was just the fact that, well, you know, why were we not chosen? It wasn't a case of any bias or anything like that. So, obviously, we were potentially drawn against Dundee United, and Specky Thompson decides to raise an issue about the fact that it's not a neutral venue, the fact that Rangers could face them in the semi-final. Obviously, we got there and they upped their ante with their complaints. They were no happy the fact that it was at Ibrox, it was going to be classed as a home game for us. You know, we were drawn out of the pot first, I believe, so take that what you will. But still, obviously, this is due to Hampden not being available because of the Commonwealth Games. The next thing that came up was they were demanding 20,000 tickets. Which is incredible. Their average home attendance has not been anywhere near, you know, that this year. It's been less than 10,000. They've been in the last two semi-finals of competitions, and they've failed to take even 10,000 there. So how they can demand, you know, 20,000 tickets is beyond me. Certainly, on average, should be a 50-50 split. However, common sense prevails that, well, why give them 20,000 tickets and then haven't they resold back to the SFA for Rangers fans to have a mad dash and put us out? You know, incredible.
When I was out yesterday, I had an appointment yesterday, and there was a Sun newspaper sitting, and I actually read, I don't really read the newspapers, but I read Richard Gough and one of the newspapers talking about how embarrassed the Dundee United supporters must be, and the players at the antics, Stephen Thompson at the moment going on about this. He's been made to look a right fool big time. You know, what would have happened if Rangers hadn't got to the semi-final? There would have been nothing said. There would have never been brought up. It's purely him showing his frustration and hatred to our club, which has went on for years and years. We all know about it. It's absolutely pathetic. He's needing to get a grip himself big time. The fact that the SFA even came out and, you know, basically said, you know, you've only asked for 8,000 tickets here. What are you going on about? Why are you making such a huge issue of this? You've only asked for 8,000. You'll only sell 8,000.
What's the problem? You're going to be getting half the gate money regardless. Mm. He's been made to look an absolute fool. And as I say, if there can't be any Dundee United fans or the players out there that can't be embarrassed by this guy. Absolute lunatic.
But you know, the best of it is, though, is that he's tried to say that the SFA weren't showing the right facts about what the conversation they had about saying that they only asked for 8,000. Then they were, you know, sheepishly backed down about it. So they've tried to, you know, call the SFA liars, and then they've had to back out of it because they knew that they were liars, lying themselves. And then they've tried to deflect the situation by saying, well, I'm not sitting in the director's box, I'm sitting in amongst my fans because I'm fearing for my safety.
I know, and absolutely then, pathetic.
And then the Arab Supporters Trust is saying, yeah, we fear we'll no sell out because we're fearing for the safety. There's going to be a lot of issues here. I mean, when was the last time, one, there was an issue in the director's box at Ibrox? Never. And when was the last time there was running battles in the stands at Ibrox?
Derek,
I don't remember any.
I've had my season ticket at Ibrox, as I've said, for around about 1993, right? And I have never, there's only been one occasion that I felt unsafe as a Rangers supporter, and that was a night that we played Feyenoord in the UEFA Cup, and where my season ticket was right next to the corner where the away fans were, and basically a section of Feyenoord fans jumped in to basically have a big fight with us. There was hardly any police or anything there. That's the only time I felt unsafe at Ibrox, and all the time I've been to countless Rangers Celtic matches, I've been to countless times we've played Aberdeen, Aberdeen hate us every bit as much as what the Celtic fans do. I've been called every name under the sun, I've been threatened every way, but I've never ever once felt unsafe at a ground anywhere in Scotland before, especially not Ibrox. So where they're getting all this nonsense from, I've got no idea.
Well, the best thing is their stadium is the one that, or rather their, they're the ones who've had issues in their stadium in the past few years with the European game, was it last season, running battles in the stands. So it baffles me how they're even kind of there's coming away with this.
There's going to be a heightened police presence there due to, because the tensions will be running high, Derek. We know that. We've got a disdained dislike for everybody that had a pop, and certainly Mr. Thompson was one of the first people to put the boot into us when we were down big time, saying there would be no way we'd be back in the Premier League, trying everything to try and ruin us as much as possible. So there will be feelings will be running high. I know the Rangers fans at Ibrox will be impeccably behaved as always, because they always are. People always try to pick fault with us, you know, that don't like us, and there's very little that they can say about us, especially at Ibrox, because we do take care of our stadium, and there's never a lot of incidents in there. So I've got no doubt that there's not going to be any problems for our side of things. Where that they're saying that they're scared to take their children and all of that to games, absolutely preposterous. I was raging when I read that, because I would take my wee boy to that game without having any worries about it, and he's only 7. I wouldn't have any fear about that whatsoever, and for them to come away with things like that is just an absolute joke, and just another sly pop at our team and our supporters on the side is all it is.
Well, this morning the RSDF came out with a statement looking for clarification from our own club as to the comments and what's going to be done about it, because it is, you know, absolutely a joke what they've came out with, and there's no foundation of it whatsoever. So I hope that the club are going to take that forward. At the end of the day, I hope that the SFA or Rangers rather are not the ones that are picking up the policing bill for this, and it'll be the SFA, because the bill for this should be just charged right back to Dundee United for really just stoking the flames for a situation that is obviously going to be a wee bit heightened already. They've just really, really put the cat amongst the pigeons, and what's making the game safe now is the fact that there is going to be, you know, that amount of Dundee United fans at the ground. You know, it's alright when it's like a normal game when they're just in the corner there, but there's going to be at least, well, we think anyway, at least 8,000 fans there, and this is where the issue is going to come now. So they've just really, really, you know, embarrassed themselves. So
it's Derek, it's not Dundee United have stoked the flames, it's one man that's stoked the flames. Do you know what I mean? The other board members for Dundee United must be saying to themselves, we need to put a gag on this guy because he's really going to get us into serious bother here, and it's purely down to hatred of your club, that's all it is.
Well, the great thing was is everybody's putting them in their place now, and Jackie McNamara was shown right up by David Tanner on Sky Sports the other night with your game. He basically said to him when they were talking about the neutrality issue, he says, Jackie, were you playing in that cup final when it was at Ibrox, when it was at Parkhead against Rangers Celtic? Oh yeah, and Rangers won that game, didn't they? You know, and it basically just shot the whole neutrality thing down. Yep. The fact that it was at Parkhead.
To be fair, Derek, Jackie McNamara's not really said much about it. I think he's been quite embarrassed about it as well. And
he was actually coming out and basically saying that it was not a neutral venue. I don't know if you've seen the coverage on the football, he's maybe not came out in the press about it, but he certainly came out on Sky Sports, and he was not as bad as Thompson, but he certainly was you know, fueling the fire as well.
Yeah, I suppose at the same time, though, he's really got to, you know, back his chairman, because that's who's paying his wages. But it's just pathetic. It was all of this is basically just down to sheer dislike of Rangers and trying to wind things up big time. I hope and pray, because Richard Gough said in his column that Ali McCoist will not have a team talk. He'll just have to type out everything that Mr. Thompson said over the last few weeks, and that'll be enough motivation for the Rangers players. I really hope all the Rangers players have been taking note of this, you know, and we will use it in the match as a bit of motivation, because it's just down to pure hatred. So all it is.
Yep. Right, so is there anything else you've got, Dave?
A couple of wee things, Derek. We forgot to speak about it last week. Everybody out in Twitter land, Rangers supporters anyway, will have seen this huge news that Vladimir Weiss and Philip Sebo were going to be planning some incredible, incredible feat for all us Rangers fans, that they're a huge treat. They were getting the tweets fired back, you know, is Vladimir re-signing for Rangers? What's going to be happening? It turns out that Vladimir has had a wee girl, and Vladimir Weiss and Philip Sebo posed with a Rangers tops on with a glass of red wine to celebrate it. So we were all, you know, of course, congratulations to one of your former players who was a bit of, you know, the two of them are cult heroes to the Rangers fans. We're really pleased for Vladimir, but you really had your hopes up there, lads. His son, really huge, and that's what it was. We're a wee bit disappointed, but pleased for Vladimir Weiss that he's, you know, his partner's had a baby, and congratulations and all that. The only other thing, I don't know if you've seen it as well, Derek, that I read in the paper. See, I should maybe start buying the newspapers. I would have things to talk about in this pod, but in the same newspaper, do you remember a long time ago, we spent quite a lot of money on sensational World Cup record goal scorer Oleg Salenko. Do you remember that name
for
the past?
I do, yes, I do.
Oleg Salenko has basically came out. He's now...
He's came out?
No, I didn't mean he said to certain journalists, I believe he's writing an autobiography in his career. He's doing like a coaching role. And they were asking him about his time playing football, and he basically started slating Rangers and his time at the club, and said that he was coming along expecting our team to be out there winning the Champions League, when really we were playing against teams like Dundee and that at Ibrox. He says that, you know, they had players like Brian Loudrup and Ali McCoist and Paul Gascoigne. He was expecting us to be, you know, one of the top teams in the world, and he basically was slagging us off, saying it was very unprofessional, and we didn't, you know, we were playing against teams and we were putting our top teams on, our top players on the bench and still going out and winning comfortably. There was no competition whatsoever, and he felt quite let down, you know, with his time at Rangers. But I'm sorry, Oleg, you weren't exactly fucking prolific yourself when you were here, and maybe if you'd have got your finger at your arse at the time, we would have done a hell of a lot more in Europe, but you didn't really contribute much to that. So I'm not really reading too much into his wee sort of pop there at the side. We certainly paid him a hell of a lot of money for him to come and play with us for a very short time, so I'm sure he wasn't complaining when he went to the bank to every month to withdraw his wages anyway.
No,
so.
Certainly not. Ah, fuck him.
Aye, exactly. So anyway, that's about all I've got, Derek, so I don't know, yes, if you've got any more to add to that.
Just, if everyone has not already seen it, Dave got interviewed by the Rangers Report website. So we've put the links up on our Twitter page and our website as well, so certainly go and check that out, as well as the other articles, as ever, fantastic stuff that they do there. Also, we welcome the Chase podcast, hilarious as ever, and also the other pods, The Crow and We Are The People and On Hand.
Another thing I was wanting to say, Derek, before I forget, last night I was having a wee fart about on Twitter at the back of 7 o'clock last night, and I always go on to the people that run the Rangers Old Picks Twitter site, which is brilliant. They put on a lot of, put pictures of Rangers players for the past, pictures of Ibrox that we've never seen before. You know, their archive's absolutely fantastic. And every Thursday night, they put on a Rangers quiz at 7 o'clock that they put on Twitter. And I joined in last night, but unfortunately I only got to question 7 and I got called away to something. But I sent the guy a wee message to say that I thoroughly enjoyed it, and he thanked us, and you know, said he was enjoying the pod. So just a wee shout out to anybody out there. Give him a follow on Twitter and have a look at some of the stuff that they've got there. Old Rangers Picks, and it's at Old Rangers Picks on Twitter. Doing a great job there. Really, really interesting stuff.
Excellent. Right, so that about wraps it up for this week, and all that's left to say is thanks and goodbye.
Yes, guys, follow, keep believing, as Big Marv said, and we'll speak to you later.
Bye.
Cheers. I just got distracted when you started talking about breasts there. I was, my mind had already went, but.